Hi, and welcome to another episode of In Our Tech Society. This is our 11th and penultimate episode in this series, all about how technology is changing work. And so far, we've talked about automation, the gig economy, the future of trade unions, and how some of these pose different challenges in different parts of the world. Today's episode is about a new but related topic. In many parts of the world, women can face harassment online, and understandably, that can make them withdraw from using certain online platforms and discourage other women from using them in the first place. In a world where platforms can be really useful and important in all sorts of different kinds of work, whether that be advertising small businesses or making contacts, that can put women at a serious disadvantage in the workplace. My guest today is a researcher who's trying to change that. Irene, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you here. First off, I'll just let you introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, Paddy, for having me. My name is Irene Mwendwa. I am Kenyan and I'm based in Nairobi, Kenya. And I work for Policy, which is a feminist civic tech organization based in Kampala, Uganda. We work in the intersections of data and internet governance. We have we celebrated 5 years this year, and we have several programs that, you know, deal with directly upskilling, digital rights and digital transformation programs to ordinary citizens. And also we have programs that engage academics and other industry players such as the big tech companies on different issues touching on artificial intelligence, data, online safety. We also, engage with research, heavily on research on these areas of data and internet governance to continue to inform the new happenings and, really the transformative bit of it into the continent. Yeah. And I'm the director of strategic initiatives at Policy, where I really try to connect industry players with to continue to have the conversations on digital transformation in Africa, and to also ensure that we do the feminist analysis when we're engaging in this work, so that the ordinary problems that have been in other sectors are not emerging and gaining roots in the tech policy sector. Yeah. Over to you, Paddy.
Thank you. Yeah, Policy does some brilliant work, which I've been following for the last year or so, and I'll put their website in the show notes so listeners can find out more. And just about yourself, Irene, how did you get interested in this field?
Of course, being a young person, I know everyone will say this, but also to say that there's usually a lot of gender divides on in different sectors in the continent, and more so in my country, Kenya. Kenya, as you know, reading the news and reading papers, you'll find that Kenya is really, really gaining momentum in terms of technological advancements, with very many big tech companies setting their Africa base in the country. And this means, you know, the workforce. This means passion projects for some individuals, and also overall in general, a high uptake of digital solutions and tech solutions in the country. So seeing this and experiencing also the wonderful services that technology brings to us, I felt to myself, what more can I contribute with my movement building and coalition building skills to ensure that the problems that have been there in other sectors such as health, education, agriculture, and overall well-being in the continent and in our country do not find themselves in the tech policy and tech uptake space. And I can tell you, unfortunately, some of these are very patriarchal and very difficult ways of working have also taken much root in the tech space. And I thought to myself, let me see if I can bridge some of these issues to see where I can provide solutions. So I've been working and I've been engaging other civil society actors and general industry players to really try and get ahead of some of these challenges that will ensure that women and girls' voices in Kenya and in Africa are really part and parcel of the technological advancements in the continent. Yeah.
That's brilliant. So one of your roles within Policy is leading the Future of Work initiative, which is entitled Digital Safety for Women in the Workplace. Just to start us off, What were the concerns that motivated this project in the first place?
Well, thank you so much, Paddy, and also just thinking about policy and this program when you set base for this episode. Looking at the future of work and engaging women and literally their online safety is that very working and when we are upskilling women leaders, women journalists, and just ordinary citizens on issues to do with digital transformation and data, what we have experienced is that many, many women and girls will tell us expressly, once I face abuse as an individual, there is no use for me to continue being on the platform, or I reduce the way I engage on these platforms. And what we see is that their full potential and their full exercising of their different freedoms is not to the maximum as any other individual who's experiencing and using these digital platforms. So what we saw is that in turn, if there were very many opportunities coming through these social media platforms and other tech platforms, then women and girls would miss out. They wouldn't know and they would say, oh, I didn't know this exists. This is because you left Facebook, you left your Instagram, you left your Twitter. So you don't, the channels that you are receiving additional information have narrowed or have become so little that now the information you receive is either through the mainstream media, that's gazette, broadcasting of television and radio. And this, you know, this really limits the information that you get. Therefore, it means that very many women and girls, again, lose out on very many opportunities that may be tech-based or that may require them to, you know, learn a skill, one skill here or there to improve their well-being in the workplace or to just upskill their careers here and there. So we thought and felt at policy, how can we merge some of the research findings we have seen from the different programs we run and develop a futuristic project and program that protects the well-being of women and girls and to ensure that the media, who still play a very huge role in, you know, relaying information, still remain relevant even in the wake of technology and find quite a huge role or find their routing and the key area that they need to engage in when it comes to sharing information about the future of work.
And just to clarify on that, when you talk about engagement in tech platforms, is that mainly social media platforms or does that include Uber-type platforms?
So it could be a mix of two, because remember, when it comes to financial literacy and financial gain, you use your info-type platforms, and many women or many people in the continent, one or two people will experience scamming through either clicking an out of the ordinary link they have received on their email or received on other platforms. And once they receive such kind of once they have and experience such kind of things, they decide, you know what, I'm never even using the email again, or this kind of email platform is not the best for me. So what we've done increasingly is tell them, you know, you need to first understand how these social media platforms work. And if you understand how they work, it and other info type of platforms, really, once you understand how they work, then you'll be able to protect yourself better and your potential and your gain and your advantages and your experiences will improve and will be better. How you showcase your prowess in whatever you're doing, whether you're an artisan who has a shop, a physical shop, you can use online platforms to sell some of your wares. If you are purely an online, you know, in e-commerce, a platform-based, you know, or gig worker, then you can continue to use this info and social media platforms for your work without it interrupting your personal life and many other opportunities that have really come about from the internet. You know this, Paddy. Yeah.
And with this project, how are you going about researching and putting together these suggestions?
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. So the loose end that we felt in the institution was that who plays the role of sharing information? And we felt the ordinary or the mainstream and legacy media still have a role to play and still play a huge role in relaying information to some of the communities here in Africa. So we thought to ourselves, how do we engage them? And as we were footing the project and the program at policy,
we reached out to them and conducted a capacity needs assessment where we just wanted to understand if they understand anything to do with digital economies, you know, if they understand digital transformation in our countries and how it's picking up, and how do they cover issues to do with digital and tech policy in their media houses, and what are the challenges they face. And they told us, you know, here are our challenges. This is why we don't report. You know, it's a fast-paced environment. We continue to be under-resourced. You know, some of the skill sets has moved about and changed about here and there. So we need a bit of upskilling so that we can improve our reporting about these emerging trends and topics to improve the visibility for fellow women and girls. And therefore that led us into co-creating and collaborating with media houses, both legacy and alternative media in East Africa, just to understand, initially, just to understand what are the challenges. And you know what came out? Unfortunately, the same people who we rely on to share this information are also facing the same challenges that other women are facing. So women journalists, as influential people, as visible people online, face very high levels of online violence. And this, what in turn this does is also it reduces their psyche and their morale to engage on this area of digital policy or tech policy. We also found that they, you know, if they decide to engage in it, there are some advancements which to date, you know, they don't have a clear understanding of how some of the advancements have progressed, and they will need constant upskilling. And this requires resourcing, which continues to be a challenge in some of the both state and privately owned media houses. And then the other thing we felt was that there are other priority areas, to be quite honest, Paddy, you know, that remain uncovered and need to be covered, like access to education for very many communities in our region is still a challenge, you know. Just the economic status right now globally is a threat to everyone, because people are just trying to fend for themselves. So looking at all these needs, we felt that different media houses and legacy media and individual powerful journalists need to come out and be vocal about these tech and digital issues so that it can start gaining a momentum, and ordinary citizens will themselves have technological know-how and knowledge that can enable them to engage comfortably on these platforms, and also will invigorate that clear uptake. Because there's uptake, yes, but you need someone to be clear about why they need an email. Why do you need a social media account? Why do you need to go on gig economy platforms such as Upwork, such as Uber, such as Bolt, and many other apps that really are assisting individuals in their everyday life and, you know, giving us that economic power. So these are some of the emerging issues that came about when we were conceptualizing the project and when we engaged the direct target groups who we felt play a very huge role in the future of work in the continent and in our communities. Thank you, Paddy.
It's interesting what you're saying about legacy media. So do you see an educational role then for legacy media? I mean, we're recording this in August. You've recently had an election in Kenya. But for you, am I right in thinking that for legacy media should not just be about covering politics, it should be also educating people about the use and challenges of these different technologies?
Certainly, Paddy. It's also a clarion call, really, for development organizations and philanthropic organizations to continue to collaborate with the media, to resource them. And resources are both financial and upskilling, where these journalists who are very credible and recognized and very powerful and very vocal about different states of current affairs are able also to come out clearly about the power of the internet, for instance, in our communities. And are also able to make people understand how to prioritize, because at the end of the day, the way the future is set up, it's evident that we cannot work without engaging digitally. As simple as different countries in the world, when there are internet shutdowns, you'll find that everyone will still try their maximum and level best to access that internet that many countries don't prioritize. So the same way that we feel that food and education are quite important in our lives, and the internet, because it's a source of community and it's a source of also economic power, is quite important for, you know, media, both legacy and alternative media, to connect and give women this role, women these roles. Yeah, thank you.
Just on that, you talked about engaging with local communities and the media. Could you talk a bit more about where you see this project going and what you've found out already?
Oh, wow. Lucky for us, we started with very minimal resources and also really staffing, but it's opened up and we've been able to attract other, you know, like-minded organizations, and we are scaling it to West Africa, Senegal, starting next year. We are also scaling it into Lusophone Africa, maybe beginning with Mozambique. And what we want to see is if there are any differences, is there uptake of, you know, reporting on digital advancements in the region, in these countries, and in the uptake, are, you know, what are the attitudes? Is it helping women? Is it helping girls beyond just information? Is it helping connect communities where there are challenges and natural disasters like the cyclone in Mozambique, you know, the cyclone that happened recently? How was, you know, the internet used to ensure that communities remained in touch and were able to attract resources and many other things? And eventually, we're also going to be able to recognize the journalists who have been spearheading and been resilient in producing stories about the digital transformation in their countries. And we are going to recognize them in, you know, a way that's going to showcase their effort in Africa. We want to see if we're also collaborating with organizations in these countries to host public debates that will also bring in the government, bring in the general public, and these journalists to just ask, to pose questions and challenges and just critique positively to see how we can all improve in our different roles that we play in this future of work, and to ensure that everyone understands the role that they play beyond just critiquing and beyond just putting out words. Yeah.
And you said one of the key aims is to understand how women and girls can protect themselves better on these platforms. Could you talk a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yes, definitely. What we mean by that is journalists in these media houses will have an opportunity to either share on their own volitions, on their own social media profiles, about the importance of digital safety, for instance, which will reinvigorate this conversation to their followers. Remember, some journalists are very influential and have huge followings. And once there is an uptake of this, then they'll be confident to take to their editors, because at the end of the day, it's editors who decide what stories are going out. And if there's that resilience of always bringing it up and speaking about it, then they'll be able to share it in mainstream media, and it's going to reinvigorate conversations in households. At the household level, some people are going to be challenged. You know, I'm just looking at the whole tree of how the whole cycle of how the, you know, the change is going to happen. At the household level, you know, heads of families and people are going to challenge themselves. Why do I do this? Why do I abuse people online? Because when it comes to online abuse, both the perpetrator of the abuse and the survivor of the abuse need to understand what role they play. So for the survivors, we'll also want them to understand that they can use these platforms to report and continue to post and continue to engage on these platforms and not leave the platforms. Because as I started this talk, when we started the show, we talked about how many women feel, you know, I cannot continue to engage on this platform because I've faced online abuse and my reputation is on the line and so many other things. And also there's the issue of freedom. You know, it's going to help them make choices about the right platforms to go on, the right information to take, the links not to click, and so forth. So that kind of cycle is what we hope eventually will happen with communities. But this power has to start from the people who have a huge following, the people who are able to grasp the audiences, because you know we cannot do it by ourselves as CivTech organizations working on these areas. You know that we need the people who have experiences and are able to capture large crowds to do this. Yeah.
And when you're talking about these kinds of stories, are those cases of discrimination which haven't been reported, or online harassment, or what kinds of stories would you like to see promoted in Kenyan media?
Oh, so it's beyond even the Kenyan media. So we want to see, of course, the power of the internet. And this is some of the advancements that we are seeing through government digital transformation programs, how you're now able to register online and get your national ID, or register online and get your passport to travel about. You're able to share this with your friends, either online or offline. How, you know, the power of the internet, especially in the wake of COVID, people are able to do e-learning using Zoom, others using Facebook Live because sometimes Zoom was not working that much, others using Twitter Spaces. You know, it's just understanding the power and the potential of the internet as a whole, but also highlighting the challenges that it brings so that people can understand you're not joining a perfect system. It also has issues, but it is upon you to see and select how to handle these challenges and solutions as you can provide. Yeah.
Even before we get to this issue of women's safety online, is there a societal problem? Is there a gap that exists in the skills and education, especially digital skills, etc., and digital education between men and women?
I will say it's just societal norms that which continue to be, you know, which come up online. Same societal standards that women should behave this way when you're talking is also what we see women experiencing online. So it curbs and it limits the way they engage online. It's not more about the education of, you know, maybe they really don't know how to use these platforms. You find that the challenges emanate from very high patriarchal standards and very high societal standards that continue to limit women's engagement online. And in turn, then it affects how they want to experience these platforms. But ordinarily, there's a huge appetite. There's a huge, huge, you know, keen observation generally by the public and also by women to really embrace technology. But remember, if you don't have, you're not economically empowered, you're not able to buy a smartphone, you're not able to buy a tablet, or you're not able to buy a laptop. If you don't have a job, or if you don't have your own money, you're not able to make these decisions easily. You'll find yourself prioritizing the little you get, or the little that's given to you in the cases of very patriarchal societies. And then to also add that due to unemployment in the region, you know, there's the sense that, you know, you need to prioritize. So that's why you'll find that even when women are able to make a living out of ordinary casual jobs, they don't have an understanding that they can always embrace technology and some of the opportunities it provides online to advance some of the opportunities that they've been able to get offline. So it's a mixture of all these things, really. Yeah.
And in the context of the terrible treatment that women can face on social media, what kind of solutions are you looking at to try to tackle this problem?
Oh, thank you. So far, Paddy, we have and will continue to do, you know, upskilling. That means, you know, conducting continuous training, capacity strengthening of the role that data and the internet plays in our lives, so that we can show the value of these different platforms, whether it's both social or informational platforms, and also really to show the to show the government how they can continue to embrace the internet and technology to simplify some of the, you know, some of the services that they continue to render. We have embarked also on trying to collaborate more with academia so that we can find ways in which some of the research findings can be simplified for the ordinary citizens to see how they engage in some of the research that is usually undertaken in their communities. Because what we know, what's found is actually quite empirical, and it needs people to break this information down for the local masses to understand. So we are seeing, and increasingly we know, that we need to play the role of bringing the different industry players together so that it can be of value for each and every person who is in the tech ecosystem. And we know that it cannot be done by the tech companies alone. It also needs to be done by the users, by the policy makers, by the public policy groups who will talk and ask people the difficult questions, and also really by innovators to ensure that they continue to call on, you know, the users and other players to understand their roles and continue to emphasize how they need to use the internet in a safe way that's going to promote a really good internet that everyone will benefit from.
You mentioned big tech players, and one of the things that policy places great emphasis on is engagement, both with ordinary people and the big tech companies. And have you managed to engage with them on this issue, and are they quite willing to engage?
This is usually those wonderful questions. To be quite honest, remember, the innovators, the product team members, the engineers are all human beings. That's one thing we have come to really understand and ground as we do this work. And they are very, very willing to engage, even in their busy schedules, even when they're innovating and developing wonderful products to continue to improve their platforms. We found it quite useful to always share with them any finding that we come about in a very, you know, positive way of critiquing, of course, so that they can continue to improve their services. That's one way of engaging with them. The second way we've engaged with them is they've come to us directly and asked us, these are the challenges you found. What do you want to do? And we tell them, of course, for this issue in Africa, we think research is needed. And we collaborate on research topics. We've also collaborated with them on physical and in-person events here in Kenya, in Uganda, just holding outreaches and asking even women, especially here in Kenya before the Kenyan election, we had a chance of inviting the media, civil society, organizations, and the government to ask them, what's happening online? Are you comfortable as an individual? What goes on online? We also were able to, with one of the major big tech players, were able to come about to improve their database of what's the, because the online abuse is also revolutionary. It keeps changing. So we're also able to update some of the new slang terms that came about in this Kenyan election so that they can also improve their content moderation policies and standards for the betterment of the users against any event that's really happening. Yeah, those are the three ways that we've managed to engage with them.
And this is slightly off topic, but how good is their content moderation in Kenya? Because there's a lot of evidence I've seen from other parts of the world that their content moderation algorithms, which are trained on English, are therefore not very good at detecting, say, hateful speech in other languages. And obviously in Kenya, there are lots of other languages being used besides English. What's your impression of that?
For content moderation, no tech company has ever gotten it right, unfortunately, for non-English speakers, because we know many technology companies have founded their platforms on the one English, on the one language, which is English, which they believe is the most commonly and widely spoken language. So we continue to challenge these platforms, we continue to challenge tech companies, we continue to challenge even our own governments to push these tech companies to hire more local staff in their companies, to hire locally formed content moderating agencies, because right now there's quite a huge uptake of the same, and many are springing up in the continent, and to also widen their, you know, their design languages, so that even when they're designing these platforms, then they will always have these languages at the back of their minds. It's important to also note that some non-English languages in the global north, which may be spoken by 600,000 people, that everything is based on these platforms. But a language like Swahili, which is spoken by over a million people in Africa, is yet to be fully exploited by these platforms. So it's a matter of even, you can see clearly, it's a matter of the dedication that's required. And the dedication that we feel will work best is if they continue to set offices here, if they continue to staff local engineers, local content moderation agencies, so that they can continue to support non-English content moderation, and also increase the pace, because yes, there might be an improvement, but the pace needs also to match with the ever-changing pace of posting that people, you know, have recently increased, and also the different platforms and options they continue to provide for us. Yeah.
And I'm curious, I mentioned the Kenyan election briefly in passing. Did you see social media play a significant role in that? And what kind of role was that?
Oh, yes. Obviously, the Kenyan election is, everything plays a huge role in the Kenyan election. And for a politician, you know, they will tell you when they're campaigning, when they're preparing to go into the ballot. It doesn't take just one avenue, doing in-person meetings, doing large rallies, doing large, you know, community door-to-door, you know, campaigning. They need to also go and engage their online audience, because the online audience has a huge, huge influence. And when it comes to the role that the media plays, of course, most media groups in Kenya have adopted a way of using both traditional media to relay information and their online platforms. So a lot of public debate reinvigorates once they share news on their public platform. So it's very important that both politicians and media remember that technology and social media remains to be a very huge, huge uniting front for public engagement and public debate. And this really also enables people to share without, to exercise their freedom of expression, which for a long time in many African countries remains to be a challenge, especially during electioneering periods, really. Thank you.
So just bringing this back to your project on digital safety for women in the workplace, what would you like the future of work to look like? In other words, what would be the success of this project?
Ah, wow. The future of work for me as Irene, first let me start with myself, is a woman being able to understand that the mobile phone, the smartphone that she has, the tablet that she bought herself, maybe she's using for personal things here and there, journaling and taking photos and videos, and also maybe engaging on social media, is a very powerful tool that can be able to be used to attract different resources to her, such as, you know, learning opportunities, financial opportunities, if used well. And ultimately for the project, the same really, for women to understand that digital transformation is alive, and that they should embrace it and be alive to the fact that they're also play a very huge role in the digital transformation in our countries, and therefore they need to understand the technological advancements, and they also need to embrace some of these technological advancements so that they can improve their economic well-being. They can also improve their autonomy and ways of making decisions for their lives, so that they can be in control of what they do for themselves and for their families and for their communities, really. Yeah. For me, future of work is about power, and it's about women really taking back power in their lives. Yeah.
Thank you so much for speaking to me today, Irene.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out our episode from our first series about feminism in Africa and the challenge of deep fakes, which is with one of Irene's colleagues from Policy. Next week is our final episode of this series, and we've got something really exciting planned. I can't wait. So remember to subscribe to the show to stay up to date. And finally, we're working on a new series at the moment. So if there's a topic or researcher you'd like to hear about, send us an email or drop us a message on Twitter. I'll leave the links for those in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.